that, you know, there is a better way to move your body and that, you know, your legs don't have to work that hard, because when they are working, let's face it, that's where most injuries come. So the fact that it could be, I mean, I've been running, well, chi running since 2010, and at the peak of my ultra running, you know, maybe I'm doing 50, 60 mile weeks, I've only been injured once.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Well, hey, welcome back to another episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. My guest this week is a returning guest, Lisa Pozzoni. She's a running coach, a chi running instructor, a master instructor. And so we talked with her one of my early episodes on this. If you may have heard her, there have been some changes that are going along. And so some of the people that I've had on the show, I'm going to invite back again, just because we all have new things happening. So welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be back, Eric.
Yes. And it's the thing I really like about doing this is that there are people that I don't know that I've invited on the show. We have a conversation and then we just kind of get to be, you know, not necessarily friends, but acquaintances and still have interactions even beyond that. So it's been kind of been that way between you and me. So one of the things that I do for first time people, and I know there are people who will be hearing this for the first time, is give us a brief introduction about who you are and how you got started as a runner.
Okay, thank you. Well, my name is Lisa Pozzoni, and I just turned 50 this year. And
wow, congratulations.
Thank you. I know. I'm one of those people who started running I think it was my late 30s. So I'm not one of these track people that did track in high school or, you know, athletes. I had lost weight with a personal trainer, and then, you know, I've done the breast cancer 3-day. So I've been used to doing some endurance walking, but never really dabbled into running. And so one of my clients gave me the Chi Running book. And so I read the book, and as a personal trainer, that made a lot of sense to me. And I started reading the book, and then I took the 4-hour workshop, and I had my personal training business at that point. And I just thought, wow, this is another way for me to get my cardio in. And of course, then I thought, well, let me add this to my services as a personal trainer. And I became a chi running instructor back in 2010. And to make a long story short, you know, I'm one of these people who said I would never run more than a 5K, maybe even a half marathon. And because of chi running and because of my love for the trails, which happened shortly thereafter I started running, I became an ultra runner. So I still to this day, even as I have these interviews and I talk to people, I still can't believe that I am a running coach. This is what I do for life. This is what I do. And I'm an ultra runner. So I run over 26.2 miles for those people who don't know. I know you're an ultra marathon podcast, so I assume everybody knows what that means, but just in case. So yeah, that's basically, and my company is the Running University. So I'm a running coach and this is what I do. I also do personal training on the side.
So what was it like then when you were running those short distances and says, I can't imagine running any, you know, running long distances. What was your kind of, where were you at back then when you were in that space before you actually started finding out that you could run farther?
Well, you know, it's really funny because I remember just a few things. Like, you know, when you start running, then you start meeting other runners, right? You start getting into the running community. And, you know, I'd meet people who were like, oh, I'm going to go do some trails at nighttime. And I'm like, I'm a klutz. So I'm like, oh, there's no way, you know, no way that I'm either ever going to get on a trail to run. I'll hike, no problem. But, you know, the chances of me hurting myself running on a trail is pretty high. And then, so I just always kept thinking like, oh, that just doesn't sound like something I could ever do. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. But of course, and what I teach now as a running coach is never say never. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, after I did my first trail run, I was immediately hooked. I love being out on the trail. So, you know, I think it was just a matter. And I think like running in life, like everything, right? If you have something that just, you know, I'm all about getting out of my comfort zone just a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's a little bit, sometimes it's a lot, but running definitely helps facilitate that process. So from somebody who thought I would never do it, it just became a matter of hearing other people doing it and then being like, well, if they can do it, I could probably do it too. So here I am.
Well, it's funny because we kind of joke that we have a couple of people in our running group that we call them the enablers, because they will take somebody and says, well, sure. Yeah, you can do that. And when I had run a 50, my goal when I first started running was to run a 50 mile trail race. And so I did that. And then I said to them, you know, I think I could do 100. And they're, oh, sure, sure. I mean, it was just like, there was no, you know, like, you know, well, you're kind of new at this, you know, there wasn't any hesitation at all. It was, one of the things that I appreciate about that, the importance of community, of having people who are doing, more than, I mean, you know, they say that in business, you know, you're going to have the success of the people that you surround yourself with.
Yes.
And when you're in the ultra running community, there are people out there who think it's normal to be able to run 100 miles.
Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, a lot of people, they call me Coach Kool-Aid. You know, I know that hasn't the best connotation. However, no,
yeah. For those of us who are old enough to remember where that came from, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. But it is funny. I mean, I've literally put that on bib sometimes because that's what my people say to me. And I always tell people, I'll never convince you to do something. If you say to me, I'm never going to run a marathon, I'm not going to bother you. But the moment that you say, I'm thinking about, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm coming in.
Well, and you said it before, never say never. I mean, that's there are things, especially say, well, I'll never do that. And
becomes normal all of a sudden.
Well, it doesn't necessarily become normal, but it's just you find yourself doing it. And
yes.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I say I'll never do a gravel race again. Running on gravel roads. But I know it's, you know, that will probably happen.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
There's one going on in this weekend, and I live, you know, in Kansas, and so mm-hmm. it's west of here, and nice rolling hills, and wide open spaces, and I know it'll be beautiful.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, gravel roads.
Yeah, I say the same thing about road. I always say like, oh, I'm not going to do another road race. But then inadvertently, you know, something pops up and you're like, all right, I could do a half on road, I guess.
Yeah. So you said you were a coach and started as a chi running instructor. What was the advantages of the chi running? I mean, there's some people who may not know yet what chi running is. Some yes. may have heard about it. And so give kind of a what's your thumbnail sketch of what chi running is all about.
Yeah, you know, it's very fascinating to me because, you know, I'm a personal trainer is how my business started. So I started with a personal training background. And when somebody gave me the chi running book, I was immediately attracted to the body mechanics of it all. Like it all just really made a lot of sense to me. I mean, the whole idea that, you know, that it's not running that causes pain, but it's how you run. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I was just intrigued, and I'm a lifelong learner. So I love to learn. So this was just a new opportunity for me to learn more about my body and how it moved while I ran. And so that's what I really loved about the chi running, but the whole idea that we're learning how to move our bodies as efficiently as possible. And of course, as an ultra runner, that becomes really important, mm-hmm. right? And so the idea that, you know, getting into good posture, which is huge, you know, that's the foundation of chi running, but really, you know, and I always love to say, we teach people to run without using their legs, which mm-hmm. people are like, what, yeah. you know, and it's not, you know, I always tell people, it's not like you're not going to use your legs, but people that don't know how to run correctly use their legs a lot. Like they use their legs to propel themselves forward. So, you know, they might reach out and overstride and heel strike, and unbeknownst to them, they may not even be getting injured, you know, whatever, but it's not the real most efficient way to move your body. So when I discovered by reading the book and really delving into it that, you know, there is a better way to move your body and that, you know, your legs don't have to work that hard, because when they are working, let's face it, that's where most injuries come. So the fact that it could be, I mean, I've been running, chi running since 2010, and at the peak of my ultra running, you know, maybe I'm doing 50, 60 mile weeks, I've only been injured once since I've been a runner. And that was actually a transition I made when I went into ultra running shoes, which I'm an ambassador, huge proponent, love the ultra shoes. I might be getting a little off.
I love, you know, for shoes, the ultra was where I kind of had my sweet spot too. So I understand that.
Yeah. And so, it was, you know, I did what I tell my people not to do now, right? Like I got into the shoes, I was already chi running, but I didn't ease into them. And so apparently my other shoes must've had more of a heel lift. So I was already a toe runner before chi running. And then I corrected that. And then I had plantar fasciitis, which is not fun. Mm-hmm. Had it for about 6 months. So that was really, I mean, again, I've done, you know, 6 ultras in 4 months. I've done ultras on back-to-back weekends. I do, you know, crazy mileage, I would say crazy for most people. I've never had an injury. And I really attribute a lot of that to chi running and the technique and just learning how to move my body correctly. So yeah, I'm huge. It's changed my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And for somebody who doesn't, who may be new to running, you know, what's the difference? You know, you said transitioning from one shoe to the ultras, what was the difference in that? And what are kind of some of the things that, you know, if somebody else is like wanting to check into ultra shoes,
yes,
heard about it, what would you advise?
Yeah. So definitely ease into them. Like I absolutely love the ultra shoes because, and I've been ambassador for 3 years for them now, because they facilitate a natural movement with your body. Right. So, and even in chi running, we say chi running is running barefoot, but with shoes on, mm-hmm, right? So with ultras, I feel the same exact way. You know, they have a wide toe box. They have, you know, what they call the zero drop, in which, you know, your toe and your heel are at the same level where most shoes, and some people may need to have some of that extra stuff when they start. So, you know, I always recommend, listen to what your body tells you when you go looking for shoes. I mean, the running store people, they're wonderful people, but they're there to sell you shoes. So, you know, do a little research on your own, but, you know, I ultimately will recommend using shoes or anything. Again, I don't run barefoot, but, you know, anything that's going to facilitate you moving your body as natural as possible, because mm-hmm, that's just the best way, in my opinion.
Yeah. And the heel lift, I mean, most of us are used to wearing shoes that have some sort of an elevation on the heel.
Right.
Shortens your calf muscle.
Exactly.
And that's when you try to go either barefoot, and that's why people get sore if they walk barefoot too much.
Yes. And that's so, exactly why I got plantar, right? Because I think I went out and did 16 miles my first day in a pair of ultras.
Oh my goodness.
Which was not a good idea. And so that's why, yes, I guess my bottom line advice, if you are going to look into ultras, which again, I highly recommend, ease into them. So I tell people now, wear them around your house first, you know, get used to the feeling, and then, you know, go out for half a mile, listen to your body. I mean, that's a big phrase that we use a lot in chi running, but, you know, it's all about learning to feel what your body's telling you and then being able to react to that, right? Or respond. I don't like to use the word react, so respond, right? Your body's giving you feedback and now you can make a decision like, oh, maybe I'll take them off now. That wasn't happening apparently.
Well, I mean, on a 16, if you put them on and went for a 16 mile run, I mean, your body could be giving you feedback, but there's, I mean, it's the same thing with when you have a little bit of an injury or a doctor, you know, that they say do take a rest day, you get 2 miles into a run and your body gets into a rhythm and you can not be getting.
Yes.
It doesn't hurt until you're done.
Right. Exactly. And I think I was in a race too. So, you know, then there was that.
Yeah.
And so probably running a little faster than I normally do, which my funny joke is I don't really race. I just go out and have a good time. So,
but if you're in a group of people and they're all, and if you're running an event, you tend to run faster, even if you're not
for
racing.
Sure. Yes.
I know I do. I do that.
Agreed. Because,
yeah. Well, and then the other thing is, and I've done this before too, they say, don't race in new shoes.
Correct.
And so, yeah, I've learned why people say that. Yep.
That's why now as a running coach, I tell people, you know, I learned, you know, I've got the educational background, you know, but at the same time, I also have the experience of these things that have happened to me. So don't do what I did.
Right. So you said you learned the chi running from the, did you read the book and then do it on your own and then take the workshop? Was that the the progression that you did?
I tend to be really one of these people who I just like to, I'm an in-person, I need to see, I need to feel it. I'm a kinetic learner, I think if that's what it's called properly. Mm-hmm. But I read the book and it made sense to me. The back of the book had chirunning.com. I went immediately to the webpage and I happened to find out at the time there was only one instructor. I'm in Arizona and Mark Wallace was the instructor and he was up here in Phoenix teaching because he lives in Tucson. And so I took the class and my God, that 4 hours was mind blowing. I mean, I'm a brand new runner and I'm learning all of this stuff. But it was just life changing. And all of a sudden it was exciting because there's all this new stuff to learn about how to run. So I had started running, but it wasn't long. I'm very grateful for that because, you know, this is one of the reasons I do what I do as a running coach is I hate it when people start running, maybe they get injured and then they give up and they say, you know, oh, well, running's not for me, you know, and mm-hmm. sometimes it might be somebody who's a little older or it might be somebody who might be, you know, a little extra weight on their frame, whatever the case is, they immediately feel like there's something wrong with them. And that's not the case. Again, it's not running that causes pain. It's how you do it. So, so that was huge for me that I was so glad that I learned early on and didn't get injuries from the beginning. Cause I might've been one of those people that just said, well, mm-hmm. maybe I shouldn't do this.
Well, and I did, I read the book and I'm kind of the opposite of you. I'm one who's like, oh yeah, well, I can figure this out for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I made good progress. It worked, but it wasn't, I mean, I didn't get the fine details. Right. And so the in-person learning gives you, I think, the finer details about how it's supposed to feel and having someone else look at you and say, adjust this. And
yeah, the video gate analysis is huge for me. I mean, you know, that I always tell people that's priceless to have somebody be able to look at you. And what I really like about what we do in the Chi running classes is that we usually do the video outside. Like you see a lot of people doing running technique or gait analysis on a treadmill, but I don't ever run on a treadmill. So I know my running would be different and I'm not critiquing any of them, but for me to be able to run, you know, outside, get the video taken to what's more my natural environment of when I'm running, mm-hmm. was huge. But yeah.
Yeah. And I've talked to, in fact, I did a podcast with a lady who does video gait analysis. She did for the Air Force, and helped them develop their running program.
Awesome.
It was all on treadmill. And I'm sure that there's a lot that, I mean, if you're running incorrectly, there's a lot of corrections that could be made.
Sure.
But there's a lot to be said for running. I don't run on a treadmill. The people at the running store, I went to get shoes, you know, and they put me on the treadmill and at like 5 seconds in, they go, no, just go out on the sidewalk. I could hardly stand up. So,
that's funny.
So yeah, I don't do treadmills.
Yeah, me neither. And I'm in Arizona. So, you know, we have the opposite of when, you know, I guess it just depends for people that are in the, you know, like the, we're getting ready, we're hitting the heat, right? Like we're starting with our 100 degree days. Mm-hmm. So either I have to get out or, you know, in the morning, usually summer's not when I'm doing most of my big training, but you know, there's a treadmill in my apartment complex I could go to, but I prefer to go run outside at early in the morning. And then, you know, it's just better for me.
Yeah. And people in Florida have the same thing, except it's the humidity that gets
yeah.
to
yeah. Yeah.
So
it's a dry heat, as yeah. you
said. The dry heat. I would rather have the dry heat than the humidity.
I agree. Me too.
So one of the chi running has been around for a long time. And the last time we talked, I know we talked about chi running. And so I wanted to give kind of a background on that to people who may be the first podcast that they're listening to and hadn't heard their earlier one. So, but there's been some changes that have happened since we last talked. And so that's kind of why I wanted to have you come back to tell about some of the things that are happening with chi running and give maybe a little bit of history about where it came from and where what's on the horizon for it.
Sure. I'd love to. So chi running and chi walking. So I'll just lump them in together under the parent company umbrella of Chi Living. Were founded by Danny and Catherine Dreyer. And so they I want to say 20, was it 2020 or 2021 was their 20-year anniversary.
Okay.
So, you know, Danny was an ultra runner and then he started playing around. So the word chi is life force energy. And so the reason why he called it chi running was because he really came to this through his Tai Chi practice. And I guess he had started working with Tai Chi, and he started implementing things from his Tai Chi practice into his running that really, he felt the difference right away. And that's how Qi running was basically born. And then of course trickled into Qi walking. And so I got certified in 2010, and, you know, as a certified instructor, and never really thought I would even become a master instructor, which a master instructor is somebody who teaches instructors to become instructors. We have some other different responsibilities. And I mean, you know, Danny's so fun, and he's just, you know, he's the guru. So of course, like I said, I'm a lifelong learner. Any time that Danny was teaching, I always said I was his best stalker. So I would stalk him. I can't remember how many times I have trained with Danny, but I know when he did do his farewell video, he did say I was the instructor who had stalked him the most. So I'm very proud. I'm proud of that title that I have. But you know, Danny turned 70 a year or two ago. And, you know, there have been several times when I was, you know, working with him where he would mention like, oh, you know, obviously he's going to have to retire at some point. And so last year, what had happened when COVID hit in March, you know, that was kind of just, I think that was the time that it needed to happen. And so Danny and Catherine had decided that they wanted to retire and move on and do some different things. And so they had reached out to the entire instructor population, which, you know, is about maybe 150 so instructors, if anybody was interested in purchasing the company. And, you know, I've always had it in the back of my head. I love it so much. I'm so passionate about it. I mean, you know, to be able to change people's lives is, you know, just, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it right now, because I do, this is why I love what I do. And so when that opportunity arose, I was like, you know, of course I have my own business. The Running University is my own company. And there's no way that I would be able to manage the whole business on my own. And so what happened is, to make a long story a little shorter, four of us decided to pitch in. And so we purchased the company, and that's myself. And then my other business partners are Vince Vaccaro, who's in New Hampshire, and Costanza Lisdero, who's in Switzerland, because obviously we are a global company. And then Sarah Richardson, who is in Vermont. And so the four of us have been, you know, we created a new LLC, and we've been, you know, leading the company basically since the official date. It was like May 18th of last year, I think, is when the actual new LLC was legitimized, if that's the right word to use. And, you know, we kind of kept it under wraps because obviously, you know, between COVID happening and there were a lot of things going on, and we wanted to make sure that when we did make the announcement of that transition, that we really wanted to honor Danny and Catherine and all the work that they had done in the last 20 years to change thousands of lives. I mean, you could read the testimonials on their website. It's just, you know, and just hanging around them. And so it meant a lot for us to really make sure we rolled it out properly. And so the announcement, I think, was just made a couple months ago. I think, you know, we mm-hmm. had a PR person involved with it, and we really wanted to again, celebrate and honor all the amazing things. And that's why the four of us really decided to come and purchase the company, because we all are so passionate about it. We know how many lives they've changed. We've changed lives throughout the process. And you know, we didn't know what was going to happen, but we wanted to be part of it. So here I am now, you know, quarter owner, but, you know, leader of the company, and, you know, still managing my Running University company here locally in Tempe, Arizona. But very happy. It's a lot of work, but but it's definitely been, you know, just an amazing process. So that's the history, I guess.
So, and I know that you kind of had a new crop of students going through. And so what is that something you're going to be continuing to do for people who want to become instructors?
Yes, definitely. As you know, so it was very interesting. So again, one of the big changes we had to make as a company is, you know, we had to embrace the digital learning, right? I mean, with COVID, it just kind of became something that had to be done. And so we moved the instructor training program to an online version, as you know, and so that is definitely something. Our goal, you know, our mission is we want Qi Running to be a household name. I mean, if people want to get into running, we want them to learn about Qi Running, because we can pretty much guarantee, I mean, you know, I say guarantee loosely, but a pain-free way to run. And if you're not running and there's no pain, and if you're running efficiently and it feels good, and you can find joy in the process and just make this something you do, then ideally it's a sustainable practice you could do for the rest of your life. And so all of us, you know, like I said, I just turned 50, you know that. I mean, you know, we're surrounded by instructors in our group that are, you know, in their 70s and they're still doing some crazy things. Like, I want to be them when I grow up. So I think I lost track of what the question was, but I hope I answered it. I always feel like I get sidetracked.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of your vision for it.
Yes.
That this is going to be something that the company to grow, you know,
absolutely.
Danny gave it a good foundation.
Yes. Yes. We are definitely, our plans are absolutely to grow the company. You know, even though we are doing some things digitally still, because we can't reach everybody, but we, you know, we have our online community and we've been teaching online courses, but absolutely, you know, and in person is always the best, right? Like when you have an instructor, again, somebody that could do your video, but our absolute goal is to grow not only locally here in the United States, but also, you know, globally. When we did purchase the company, we purchased the whole world, except for Asia. I know it still feels weird to say that, except for Asia. So Harrison Wong actually is the master instructor who is taking care of that part of the world. And so we definitely want to grow not only in the United States, but, you know, we have instructors all over the world, but the idea eventually is to grow even more so, nationally and globally.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the new website is Chi Living.
No, it's still chirunning.com.
Chirunning.com,
chiwalking.com, both of those. Yeah. And that's also another one of the projects that we're working on right now is updating the website. You know, that's been a fun thing to work on. There's a lot of good information in there and we're just streamlining some of the ways to read things and find information. But the website has a ton of information on it.
So chirunning.com.
Yeah. You can even find an instructor there. There's a spot that says find an instructor. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because once you get certified, we want to make sure people know where they can go to find certified right. instructors. And you know, the certification process is rigorous. I mean, I've been told by other people who have taken other certifications that are like, oh, you know, it's I'm not going to say it's expensive. I think it's a fair price. But there's a lot. It's a 6-month commitment. It's a big commitment into learning how to teach it. But we really are very, it's the integrity of the form and the integrity of how to teach it is very important to us. So we feel that it's all of that process is well worth it. And that when you are a certified instructor, you want to find people on the website because, you know, they're the ones who are the most up to date on all the information that we're disseminating to the instructors.
Yeah. And then the thing that I found interesting is talking to instructors, and like you've said, and I've heard this, that chi running is a practice. It's not something that you, it's something that it's a continually learning. And like they call, you know, the Tai Chi is the Tai Chi practice or yoga practice, there's always, you're always striving to get that little bit more to a little.
Yeah, this is probably one of the things that I love most about Chi Running, right? Is this idea, like, I've worked with Danny so many times and I can't tell you, like almost probably every single time I worked with him, he had an aha moment, you know, and it was amazing to me because here he is the founder of the technique. But, you know, and we say practice makes progress, right? Like, you know, you can learn the information and it changes your life. But to me, the practice is really where it's at, because I've had that happen to me where, you know, I might just be focusing on maybe two different little form focuses. And all of a sudden I have some aha moment and something flows, you know, and it's like, ah, so it just makes, again, to me, that makes my running fun because, you know, I mean, I'm not working on my form 100% of the time, every time, but I focus on my form quite a bit. And the practice is really what I love about it because you just keep learning more about your own body and how you move and about yourself. So,
And the thing that I have noticed is it becomes almost like a meditation. I mean, there's a kind of give and take between your mind and your body and just you're kind of getting feedback from your body all the time. And it's not that you don't think about other things, but there's an awareness of what's going on in your body. My wife and I were having this discussion just a few days ago that so many people, I mean, don't seem to be not in touch with their body, that it's almost an antagonistic relationship between mind and body.
Yes.
And I've called, you know, mind over matter and your mind is like a slave driver and your body is the slave and that seems to be an underlying assumption among a lot of people.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember one of the things, and I always say this, that's exactly what Danny would tell us as instructors. He would always say to us, if you can just get people to be in their body, you've already made huge progress, because people just don't understand that. And personally, I never even meditated until after Qi running. So I was turned on to meditation after Qi running, and it's a daily practice. It's the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. I meditate. Mm-hmm. So yeah, people are very disconnected. So I think there's a lot, again, and we always say, Danny even says this, sometimes I just feel like I've listened to him so many times, so I could just regurgitate his words, you know, but so he'll be like, it's not about the running. You know, at the end of the day, your Qi running practice, and it's not really about the running. I mean, sure, there is running involved with it, but this mindfulness piece adds a whole different, you know, as we say, mind with body, not mind over body.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's for me, that has been, I found that a key to endurance, the, you know, running, you know, running, when you're running the ultra marathon, you know, cause when there's the mental side and the, you know, the mindset side of being able to run, you know, for 24, 30 hours. And
yes, yes. Huge. I mean, I don't know, you know, and again, I think about these things, like, would I have ever become an ultra runner had I not discovered Qi running? I don't know. Like, I did my second 100K in February. It was the week before I turned 50. That's how I celebrate my birthday, is like, let's go. So that is my longest distance to date. I was going to do a 48-hour 100-miler over New Year's, but that got canceled because of COVID. So that, mm-hmm. that'll probably be my goal going into the next year. But, you know, it was amazing to me. And, you know, I wrote a blog about it, but that 100K took me 19 hours. It was about 19 hours. I was like on top of the world the whole time. Again, I'm not a fast runner, and mm-hmm. I don't care, because I'm never going to win the race. It's not my goal.
Right.
But oh my gosh, like, just being out on the trail for that long. And I think I had just psyched myself up. I couldn't wait. It was one of the best days of my life, you know, and it's not often, you know, your mind is going to play tricks on you. So I'm mm-hmm. sure there were definitely maybe a few times, but it was, you know, there's some races that it just surprises me that I could be done after that many hours and be like, wow, that was amazing. I don't know.
Yeah. And when you go that distance, it's just, there's something that happens, you know, with that, because you have the highs and lows. I mean, there's times when your body's like wants to quit, and you have to, mm-hmm. your mind has to kind of come along and say, no, you know, just get, and then you work through it, and, you know, then it becomes easier.
Yeah.
And you have some of those ups and downs. And I think every run, I mean, every race has, I mean, people who run 5Ks will have that in, I mean, it's in short spurts, but,
yes.
But you really get to experience the depth of it when you're in the ultra.
And that's why, you know, that is one of my things. Like I always say, I love first time experiences. So one of the things that I love to do, kind of going back to previously when we were talking about the Kool-Aid thing, is, you know, I love to turn people on to ultra running, trail running first. So mm-hmm. when people have only been road runners, I'm like, you haven't been on a trail, you know? And so because that's what I love about running. There's so many options. Like, you could do triathlons. I never say never, mm-hmm. not interested right now, but that's a way that you can put your running, you know, to use. There's so many different things that you could do. You could focus on speed. You could, you know, so that's just, so
there's multi-day events. I mean, there's
timed events, you know, those are fun. Like, a lot of people don't know about those timed events. I think those are just so fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's the timed events, there's the multi-day, which are essentially like running across the desert or running across adventure races.
That was my bucket list last year, which, crossing my fingers, we're going to find out on May 14th, Trans Rockies is a stage race up in
okay.
the mm-hmm. I'm going to be hopefully doing that August 1st. That was, I volunteered for a full week. It was an amazing experience. And then I was going to run it last year and it got canceled because of COVID. Oh, so I just started 2 weeks ago. I'm in week two of training right now for that. So I'm really excited about that one.
So, and that'd be elevation as well as,
yes, it's like
altitude. And
125 miles over 6 days. And I want to say it's 20,000 plus elevation gain during mm-hmm. that whole time. So And you know, in Arizona, our elevation is pretty flat. So, you know, trying to find good places to go to get the elevation training, but.
Yeah, because you have hills, but you just don't have the altitude. You know, you don't have.
Correct. Which is, and then I bring in the oxygen advantage book. you know, from Patrick McEwen, where he has a whole section on there about, you know, learning to train at altitude, you know, with your breath and stuff. So I still haven't really dabbled into it, but it's on my list of things to read very soon.
Well, and in the past, I have, you know, I know a lot of people get altitudes. I was one who got altitude sickness. Mm. And so the first time of going up in altitude, but that was before I was running too. So
Interesting. Yeah. I've had it, you know, I've been up, you know, Flagstaff's not too far from here. Funny, one year I'm from Massachusetts. So one year I was in Massachusetts and I had climbed the highest peak there, which happened to be Mount Greylock, which is close to Pittsfield, which is my hometown. And, you know, I think it was like 1200 feet or something. And then like I come back here and then my sister and I, you know, go up and do Humphreys, which is the highest peak here in Arizona, which is like 12,000 feet or something. Okay. So it was like, you know, so yeah, the altitude definitely plays a whole different role. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And 12,000, you get the effect. I mean, if you, anything above 10,000 is, you know, you're gasping for air. Yeah.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit now about your coaching business. Like what you've got the Running University, and I mean, the last time we talked, it was kind of primarily gauged toward women who run. Mm-hmm. Is that still going on? I mean, I see you on Instagram with going out and doing
with my ladies,
with your ladies,
my selfies. yeah. Anybody listening, you can follow me, the Running University. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. But that is, you know, so I created the Running University because, again, in this spirit of teaching people how to run, right? It's kind of how it all started. So of course, chi running and teaching technique is a big part of what I do. But then I have what I call my true tribe, which is true. The Running University is, you know, that's the acronym. But I like that it has a double meaning with the true. So, mm-hmm. And you know, the true tribe. And so that is, it's basically an online community that I have right now, but there are a group of ladies that I train, right? And so some of them are training for races and some of them just happen to be in my community. And my whole thing is really teaching, you know, using running as a way to help people change their lives for the better, right? Because mm-hmm. I think running, I mean, just the physical act of running is great, right? I mean, from, you know, all the benefits, the health benefits, and then the mental benefits, you know, but then really helping people tie that transformation that you get from, I was having a conversation just the other day with one of my runners. So she, you know, she's been running for a while. She's an ultra runner and she had to do something really hard at work. Like nobody had ever done it. Like she had to do like X amount of days in a row where she was meeting this goal. Nobody else had done it. And she just, you know, did everything she could to do it. And I said, that's all your ultra training right there. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, I love to help, primarily I help, you know, women train for races in a group setting. I'm all about the groups. I actually just took one-on-one training off of my website, like 2 days ago. I'll do one-on-one private sessions in person and I may do them on Zoom, but I won't train somebody for a race online. I don't find that much joy in it. I really find a lot of joy in being around a bunch of people. I'm an mm-hmm. extrovert generally. So, and there's so much camaraderie. Again, I teach men as well, but my group and my community is women only because I think, and our age group is maybe about 40 plus. So we're looking at women 40, 50, 60s, you know, that have gone through some life changes, whether their kids left to go to college and, you know, they're like, what do I do with myself now? And so just having them, so it is about the running, but it's about the connecting as well. So I just mm-hmm. love to connect. And my philosophy really is running should be fun. You know, I still have a hard time wrapping my head, and to each his own, but you know, when people are like, oh, my knee, and you know, or that run was just so hard. I don't really want to be, I mean, you know, there could be a hard run and I could say that that was out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I want people to enjoy it. So a lot of my people are back of the pack and I tell them, be okay with it. Like I basically have to mentally help them get through the fact that it doesn't matter. Who cares? Like if you're having fun, that's all that matters. Who cares what the rest of the pack is doing? You know, I always say the party's in the back, you know? Yeah,
that's true.
I'm just saying, you know, and I'm taking pictures. I mean, you know, all of that good stuff. Like it should be an enjoyable thing. And I think a lot of people get into running, or sometimes it's easy to join some running groups. You know, you get intimidated by the faster people. You know, it is just what it is. Like, mm-hmm. this is what I hear all the time. Or you get into some Facebook groups. I see it all the time where somebody's like, oh, I'm training for my first half. What do I do? Oh, don't worry, just wing it. No, you don't want to wing it. Like, again, ultimately, my goal is to get people to learn how to run correctly so that it's a sustainable practice. Like I always tell my ladies, I hope that when we're in our 80s together, we're going to be doing these races and just having a blast the same way that we do now. Because it's, and, you know, again, that whole connecting and camaraderie is about, you know, it's good for your mentally too, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's the blue zones. What does he talk about? That one of the big things of people, the centenarians, that people that live over 100 years, is that they have that community and that connection. So yes, community is huge for me.
Community is huge. And that's one of the hardest things I think has been about this pandemic.
Yes.
So many people have lost, you know, lost that sense of community, or they, you know, they didn't have it, or they had it in work or whatever, but they didn't have it outside of, you know, like what we have with running.
Yes, and, for sure. Yeah. And the running community, generally speaking, is such an amazing community of people, right? And you find your people, like, you know, again, mm-hmm. there's running clubs. If there's running clubs with elite people, those are not my clubs, but you know, the people that are the trail runners or, you know, whatever, you just find. And I tell people, find your tribe, you know, I might be your tribe. I might not be your tribe. So.
Well, and even in our, I mean, in our trail group, there's a group of people who run together all the time, and they're about the same speed and faster than most of us. But you can feel like maybe you're excluded, but what I have found is that, you know, to show up
yep.
and keep coming. And, you know, if you don't feel a connection immediately, if you show up often enough, people will get used to seeing you and you'll be part of the group.
Yes.
I know for some people that's a hard thing to do. And
yes.
It's
very much a hard thing to do. And that's why I feel like when I have people, I mean, I get a lot of my clients through referrals, because people will be like, no, mm-hmm. you just have to come. Cause I've had people be like, I've been in two other running groups, and again, kind of the same. And it just depends, you know, like I'm sure a lot of great running groups out there, but a lot of times when you find an established group, it is hard to fit in sometimes. So mm-hmm. I just keep trying or find another group.
Right. Well, especially if you run slower than everybody. And so but I had an advantage. I think that I knew the trails. And I ran by myself on the trails. So when I was with the group, you know, we would get together and hang out afterwards. And I said, you know, nobody has to show me the way. I know I can find my way back.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the other thing I do,
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, with my group, when I have group runs, like, they know my rules. I have very strict rules. So I say all pace levels are okay. If you're a faster runner, you're going to go ahead, and maybe I have them turn around every 15 minutes. So if they're ahead, they come back. So they're going to get more mileage. They come back, they loop back till the last person. We hang out for a little bit, and then they go back out. And mm-hmm. I always tell the faster runners, they have to be okay with that. And I have to tell, because sometimes slower runners like, no, don't come back for me. And mm-hmm. I say, no, we're coming back for you. So if you don't like it, and I always tell, if you don't like turning around, or you don't like coming back to be looped in, then you probably don't want to come to our group run, because that's how I roll.
Yeah. And there's another group that I'm part of that's the thing that nobody left behind.
Yes.
I understand both of those, but I run by myself a lot. So I was, mm-hmm. I was like, I know the trails. So
yeah, exactly. And actually, if I could just, I'm going to throw a little plug out there for Trail Sisters. I'm a leader for Trail Sisters, and
I have heard of them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're a great group. And again, it's a women only, a group that we also have Trail Misters. So once in a while, you know, the guys are able to join in, but it is kind of in that same spirit again. It's like, you know, getting women turned on to trail running you know, that thing. So they're all over the country. So if you go to the Trail Sisters website, you could hopefully find
you can find local groups on the,
they have an online community as well as, you know, groups in person. So I'm one of the leaders here right now. I'm the only one, here in the Phoenix area, at least. I think we might have one in Flagstaff and Tucson too, but yeah, if people want to go look for them, they usually are it's usually no person left behind there too. So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that I've noticed that, you know, the women's groups, especially, and women running groups, tend to be more of no one left behind. You know, guys tend to be a little more competitive. It's like, oh yeah, you're on.
I agree.
You're on your own. Mm-hmm. But I have noticed that the trail running community, especially, tends to be much more supportive and inclusive.
I found that too. And again, I don't want to downplay, but I feel from having been in both, and you know, even when you're on a trail, like I did a race last weekend, And you know, like people pass you and they're like, good job. You know, like you just don't hear that as much on the road. People are just focused to get to the finish line. And on trails, there's just a different energy, even though there's elite people and the super fast people, but there just seems to be a different energy, you know, of trail runners.
Well, and I've heard, I don't know, it doesn't happen in every race, but I've heard, you know, people who have been middle of the pack or back of the pack runners talk about how the people who finished the race or you know, who won the race actually had stayed and were cheering the people on, you know, who were coming in behind them.
Yeah. I love that. I think that is such a great, and we do that with our group when we're at a race, like we'll wait for our last person to come in, which sometimes our last person is DFL, you know, and that's okay. We always say, right. Mm-hmm. If people don't know what that means, you know, dead effing last, I don't want to swear on your podcast, but it's true. And I always tell people, be proud. I mean, some races, Javelina 100, you get a prize if you're the last person, you know, so mm-hmm. I think some races do that. And I think it's great because it's great to see, you know, race companies also supporting those group of people, you know, it's not just about, and it's great. I think somebody was telling me the other day that Scott Urich has done that, you know, they read it in his book or something that, you mm-hmm. know,
he was racing. Yeah. I know there's several elite, you know, high elite runners who are, you know, very,
and that's a long wait. I got to give them credit. Cause you know, as somebody who normally again finishes, I mean, my first 50 miler, I was DFL. I was the last person who came in 15 hour cutoff. I finished in 14:59:48. Right. So literally,
wow, you
12 seconds. And so, but I always go and look just out of curiosity to see how fast the finisher did it. And, you know, mm-hmm. just for, and usually I've done it in double the amount of time. They've usually mm-hmm. finished, you know, so if it took me 15 hours, the guy did it in 7.5, you know? And right. so if people are waiting that long, you know, they probably go home, maybe change, get their food and come back. I don't know, but I do appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that there's different hards too, because a lot of times people are like, oh, like the back of the pack are my people, but you know, not to take away, you know, I'm reading actually right now, Dina Castor's book, Let Your Mind Run. I assume you may have read that one. And it's, you know, I don't really read about elite people so much because my niche is different. But mm-hmm. it's a very fascinating book for me to read how elite people train. I'm like, wow. You
yes. know, so. Yes. And you know, their competition is, I mean, all of us compete. I mean, we're competing yes. with ourselves. And so
yes.
they're still competing with themselves to make themselves the best they can be. They just happen to be also running.
Right. Oh my gosh. I'm like reading this and it's a great book. I'm glad I got it for my birthday actually. So I'm almost done with it. I read 7 pages a day because it's one of those things that I don't make it, you know, making it a habit basically.
So do you have a bucket list race? I mean, that you said you're doing the Trans Rockies. Is that kind of, or do you have a race beyond that? That's like, oh, wow, this is one that I would love to, if I could get a chance, I would go do.
You know, it's funny that you say that. So Trans Rockies is my bucket list race right now. And funny, we were talking about really long distances. Now, mind you, I've not done a 100 miler yet. So I feel like I have to get a couple of those in. But the, it's going to be here. It's an inaugural. It's happening and starting this week in Arizona. It's called the Cocodona. It's a Cocodona 250. It's a 250 miler. Uh-huh. And it's starting, you basically cross pretty much half of Arizona. It's, well, 250 miles. So you start, it's a point to point race. So I'm saying this now funny in a way that I don't even know, you know, I might do a 100 miler and not want to do it. But after my 100K, I felt so good. I love distances. I love being out there. And I just like in general, you know, I feel like I should have more on my bucket list. But in general, I love to travel and go see new territory. So a lot of like I've done my other bucket list race that I did do was Canyon de Chelly. It was a 50K. It was, you know, it took me 3 years. I was on the waiting list, but it's an absolutely, you're in the canyon. You only can get access if you have Navajo guides or you're doing the race. So it's a sacred ground. Okay. Monument Valley, Antelope Canyon. I've done some of these races that to me, that's just a great way to see our beautiful country, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So anything in that, you know, and I would always say it's, you know, Boston is not necessarily a bucket list race for me just because Boston is a road. But being from Massachusetts, I feel like there's something there. I don't know that I would ever qualify, honestly. And I keep saying I'm pretty good at fundraising. So maybe someday I may just decide to raise some money and do Boston just because I feel like it's something I have to do. No desire to do Western states, right? Like Western states mm-hmm. is the Boston of ultra marathon.
Yeah, it is. Yes.
You know, I'm not really, I don't have any desire for that right now, but you know, I'm always open to ideas.
Yeah. We, some of our running group, we were having some discussions about Western states and some people who had a guy who had been, he'd lived there and he lived in, I think Auburn was that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was talking about the race because he was kind of involved in it and some of the things, you know, behind the scenes. And it was, you know, similar to the, you know, the politics with Boston, you know, the stuff that goes on, you know, Boston Marathon, Western states is kind of that way as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's got the name, it's got the cachet and, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because I've talked to people, you know, people that just dying to get in there, right? And however you get your tickets. And I know people that are like, you know, people get one ticket and they're in, you know, however the lottery happens. So, you know, yeah, it's just never been, you know, and again, my 100-miler that I plan on doing is going to be across the years. So it's actually one of those timed events.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Here in Arizona. Okay. And again, I love to support my home racing company, Arrow Viper Running. So I'm going to give them a plug. They actually do Javelina 100 as well, which is a pretty big popular race. Globally, people come from around the world for Javelina 100, but across the years it was a 6-day. I think it's 10 days. I don't know. The last year, 2 years ago, it was 10 days because it was their 10-year anniversary.
Oh, wow. Okay. So a continuous 10-day.
Yeah. So it's like a one mile loop, which again, not my favorite necessarily. When I told some people that was going to be my first 100, some people were like, I thought you would do something more epic. 100-miler is kind of epic in its miles, own.
It doesn't matter. And there is, you know, to run on a mile. I mean,
there's something that, exactly something about that. Like, yeah. So I've done, and we have a couple here that on a quarter mile, also, and again, they're absolutely not my favorite, but I do enjoy doing those. I think it's great. It's more about the community at that point too, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're on this loop and you're seeing a bunch of people, you know, people get dressed up. And I always tell people, like, you know, you start off, the minimum is 24 hours. So you buy 24 hours and you do whatever you want. You could bring a tent, you can nap for 12 hours, whatever, you do whatever you want. You have 24 hours to run, sleep, you know, and then there's an aid station, right? Every mile, which you don't.
That's, yeah, that would.
Right. You don't really need, but
you wouldn't have to carry a lot of water.
Right. Yeah. You pretty much really don't. So, so that's a race that I have volunteered. My company, the Running University, has volunteered on New Year's Eve because it's actually, that's the reason it's called Across the Years, because it usually starts, 12:28 to 1:05, whatever. And I usually volunteer at midnight because it's just so fun to be there and just, you'd be part of all the craziness with everybody. And then, you know, I usually get an entry because I'm filling up volunteer spots. So I've done, you know, I never do more than what I'm supposed to do for my training, right? Because that's how I roll. Like, I'm not going to go out and do 50 miles if I'm not trained for 50 miles, because I could get hurt that way. Mm-hmm. Good technique helps. But, you know, so I've done, I think 40 miles is the longest I've done on that course. And I plan on actually doing it over 2 days, though. Like, I'm not going to try to do 124 hours for my first one. It feels too stressful. So I'm just going to buy the 2 days and probably go take and, you know, sleep in between, maybe do 60 and 40. I don't know. I haven't really come up with a plan, but yeah, I want it to be fun.
So would you think there might be a risk of stiffening up if you take that long of a break?
You know, it's possible. I've never really played around with that yet. So I'm sure as I start getting into that training, then, you know, because I'm pretty much now training until then, right? Because Trans Rockies is in August. I'm training for that. And then I'll just keep my training going. And I'm lucky that as I'm training women for their ultras, you know, as their coach, I get to run with them. So I get some of my runs. I also do enjoy my solo runs, you know, as well. But yeah, I'm glad that you asked me that question. I'm sure it would have, you know, as I started preparing, I'm sure I would have started thinking about that. So I have to start thinking about, and, you know, usually I will do that. I will do runs where I'll run, you know, back to backs, of course, is very, very typical for ultra running, where you run the Saturday, Sunday long runs back to back. So, you know, I may have to do a good couple of weekends of those, you know, longer back to backs and rest, and then pick it up again and see what happens.
Cause I've thought about that with the people, you know, with the 200 mile distance, and, you know, the people who do that, and, you know, stopping and sleeping, and because you can't, well, I mean, some of those guys, they're running, you know, 50, 60 hours straight, and do it all in one shot. But those of us who are, you know, don't run that fast, you have to stop and sleep. You can't keep going.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I thought. Cause I, at first when Cocodona came out, they announced it last year for this year. I was like, oh my God. And okay. You know, they had a 100 miler as a pre-qualifier. And of course I was hoping that that would happen, but then, you know, it didn't happen, but I thought, well, I could do 50 miles 5 days in a row. It's 5 days. So you have mm-hmm. 5 days to finish it in. I mean, that still sounds crazy, right? Like 50 miles a day. But I mean, you know, I've done a 50 miler once. So all that got announced right about when the Chi running thing happened. So uh-huh. I pretty much knew at that point, there was no way I was going to be able to handle taking on these new responsibilities with the Chi running business and then train. Like, you know, training, I love to train. I have a hard time with people who don't train. And if you're listening to this, I'm sorry, but I just don't understand. Like, to me, the training is where the magic happens, right? Like the race is the icing on the cake, but that's where, you know, you're putting in the time, you're getting all of that in. And so at least I've decided to volunteer. I love to volunteer and give back to the community. So I am going to be at the finish line for Cocodona actually next Saturday. So it'll be Friday, the 7th. So okay. I'm going to be at the finish line for, you know, I think I'm volunteering for 10 hours or something that day. So that'll be kind of fun to see the people coming in. Yeah, and it won't be that. Well, those will probably be middle of the pack because I think the finish line is up till Saturday. So it'll probably be like middle of the pack people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do people camp along the way? Is that, or do they sleep at aid
stations?
How do they handle the logistics?
Yeah. I haven't looked into that so much because I'm not doing the race. I do have a couple of my Chi runners doing it and we've been messaging, you know, I did a couple of privates as good refreshers with them and kind of going through a lot of the mindfulness stuff with that. But yeah, apparently they have sleep stations at some of the aid stations. And, you know, obviously, you know, I can't even wrap my head around, you know, what you need for your crew and your pacers and, you know, all of that. I mean, there's a lot of strategy required to get yourself through, you know, shoot. I mean, just a 50 mile race, right? Like a 250 miler. Again, it sounds so, you know, and I'd never really heard of them. I don't think I've ever heard of these until maybe it was Courtney Dowalter won the Moab one, like the 240 miler.
Mm-hmm, the Moab 240.
So, yeah. Where mm-hmm. she kind of came out of nowhere.
She won that overall, didn't she?
She won it overall. And the second person was ridiculously, far. I mean, she just, you know, came out of nowhere. She's actually done she came in and was a guest speaker with my tribe. She's such a cool, I just love
yeah,
her.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
She's so down to earth.
I don't know her, but I mean, it just is just her, the way she yeah. is, you know, I see her on social media and just, she seems very genuine.
Yeah. That's wild. And she's just so, yeah, very genuine and just very encouraging, you know, for somebody who's as elite as she is, you know?
Well, and she tries some epic stuff. I mean,
yeah, she does. You know. Yeah. And she does those, because she even tried Barkley this year.
She tried right? Barkley this year.
Barkley. And then even those other events, what do they call those? FKTs. The backyard ones. Yeah.
The backyard ones.
Wow, you know?
Well, and she was doing the FKT I can't remember if it was Colorado. It was yeah. somewhere in Colorado. And I remember.
Yeah. And then she had the pulmonary. She had some lung.
She has. Yeah. yeah. She had some health problems from that.
Yeah. So, she's just amazing. It's just yeah, so.
And just kept a positive attitude throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Such a great person. So, yeah.
See, I am always amazed at the women in ultra running who place overall and just are out yeah. there display a incredible toughness and
yeah. Oh my gosh, crazy! Like a Barkley would never be anything. Like I can't even get myself out of a paper bag. I'm like, I need very good markings. I can't do something where I need a compass. Forget it. Not gonna happen.
Yeah, and a real compass, not a GPS watch.
Yes, yes. This is that is not on my bucket list. I mean, I'd love to meet Laz though because he just seems like the most fascinating guy. But you know, I don't think I'll ever do. I'm never gonna try out for Barkley.
Well, and it kind of epitomizes the mindset of ultra runners is
yes. that,
you know, we're all looking for something to challenge us, something to make us dig deep and,
yep. yeah.
and with the possibility of real failure.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And so, yeah. So I think that's what appeals to me about this mm-hmm. sport is the,
yeah.
To do the best you can, you know, all the mindset, the training, I mean, mm-hmm. don't skimp on the training, don't wing right. it, but to go out and see if you got what it takes to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there's always things that can happen that you, that you know you don't plan for. I mean, mud.
Right.
I
mean, yes. Exactly.
You have a downpour and the trails turn to mud, and you know that's there's a lot of things that and you have to problem solve.
Yep.
And keep so going. And yeah, it's that's the thing that I find that is the appeal, and I think that's.
I love it.
For most of us who run ultra marathons, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. And I don't know that I ever thought of it that way, but now that you're saying it and I'm looking at it in that from that perspective, I mean, I guess I like to get out of my comfort zone. So it's kind of saying the same thing, mm-hmm. but you just maybe phrase it in a little bit of a different way. You know? Yeah. Like we never get rain here. Right. So when it rains and people are like, oh, I'm not going to go out on my training run. I'm like, on race day, you have no choice, right. you know? So it's, yeah. you know, I always say like, you got to try to prepare as best as you can for these things that are going to fly at you, but you just never know what's going to happen. Anything, you could be the most prepared and anything random can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, the nutrition doesn't go right. I mean, there's a lot of things. Yeah. There's a lot of, and you have to solve the problems. And if, you know, sometimes you can't. And yep. so you get the, you know, there's a possibility of the DNF and,
yep.
But that's the appeal. And that's the thing. And I think Barkley takes that to
a whole different level.
It's like, yes. designed for you to fail.
Yeah.
And the people who've done it is just an amazing accomplishment.
Epic. Yeah.
Say again how people can reach you. What's the best
way to connect with you? The Running University, and you can find me on social media on Instagram, The Running University, and also on Facebook, The Running University. My email is Lisa@TheRunningUniversity.
Okay.
Lisa@SheLiving.com as well.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time, and I always enjoy chatting with you.
So. Yeah, me too. This was so fun. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.